Senate Revenue Committee for March 7th. Today we have two bills on the agenda, Senate Bill 177 and Senate Bill 509. In consideration of one of our members who has to leave early, we're going to go right to 509. So staff, if we could work 509, and colleagues, we will have a brief refresher about the workings of Senate Bill 509, and then we have at least three folks that have signed up for, or two people that have signed up for testimony on Senate Bill 509, and I see that Senator Harper is here. So if you could open the...
Harper's here on 177.
You may testify on any bill in our committee at any time. we have... let's just do the staff orientation to 509 and move to a public hearing and possible work session. Okay.
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 509 is, first of all, Steve, of course, has done the staff work on this, but Steve is ill today, so I'm sitting in for him. It modifies the distance for remote small elementary schools to qualify for an additional student weight. What it does is require the school to be 8 miles to the nearest elementary school within the same district, rather than 8 miles to the nearest elementary school, period. So. That's a change in the calculation for the small and remote elementary school. We do have a an update in terms of the schools affected. Here, I'll try to distribute that. And it basically is the same as you saw before. Steve got some updated information, and it shows you which schools are affected by it. It's 20 schools, roughly, that are influenced by the change.
Paul, do you have any questions on the orientation?
On the what?
Questions on the
orientation.
On Senate Bill
509. Okay. Mr. Chair. I just want to confirm. And Senator
Castillo. Thank you. So we're adding funding to these districts, and then what does that do to the rest of the districts?
The effect of changing this funding formula will be an effect that's felt by the entire ADMW. So what it will do is redistribute funds. But I think the appropriate view of this is that these 20 schools have been constrained by an artificial ceiling that prevents them from participating in the small school distribution because they were within 8 miles of another school. The two or three word change here eliminates that effect because some of these schools are constrained across district boundaries. So even if they were willing to consolidate, they'd have to have either redrafting the boundaries or a special election. You can't serve students across a boundary without some kind of a special agreement or exemption. And so this removes that requirement and allows these 20 schools statewide to participate in the small schools distribution.
So I'm looking here. It says it reduces revenue of other districts by $5.65 per extended AD. MW?
Yes, it would shift 565.
Okay.
And I think we had extensive testimony over the last couple of sessions on 509.
Mm-hmm.
And folks that were there.
The impact is slightly different from the one you saw last week.
Actually,
the new data,
it was provided by Steve, who did the equivalency of bringing the friend to the door, ringing the doorbell, and then running away. So we're having the presentation by Paul Warner. No, he's Paul. He's ill today.
I guess I'd just like to remind my fellow committee members that the Eugene School District is in the process of closing schools and having to make enormous cuts in their budget. And so asking them to take this additional cut in revenue, I don't think would come as good news to them. And I just wanted to state that.
It will not, Senator, and that's duly noted. On the other hand, the Crow Appleby, Lorraine Schools, and Mark Oley will look at this as a lifeline, and it will help them definitely. Senator
Beyer. I have to admit that I'm somewhat bothered by the fact that we're dealing with within school districts and why we just wouldn't make it any smaller than a school that's greater than 8. And I think part of the issue that Senator Castillo, of course, we're always most familiar with what's closest to us. And I know that, I really sympathize with these people, but some of them are closer than one district, one school, elementary school that I represent, Coburg City of Coburg just happens to be in the Eugene School District, and they have a small elementary school that's going to be, that's up for closure, if not this year, the next year. That's in exactly the same situation. You know, I know the citizens of Coburg, or the parents, I should say, more of Coburg, feel pretty strongly about that, that they shouldn't be forced to ship their kids off to Eugene. And I know we have similar problems with some of the ones in Springfield School District that are every bit as of concern as my my good friend who's superintendent of Crow Applegate on that issue. I'm just wondering if we're being too narrow in this focus, if we shouldn't be looking at just that distance in general for all small schools.
Well, I agree with you, Senator. I would rather have just eliminated the distance question at all. The problem with that is the one that Senator Castillo brought forward. This essentially frees 20 schools in the state of Oregon from what I think is an artificial constraint left over from those days when we were trying to force consolidations. The logic to this bill essentially is that the extraterritorial nature of the two schools makes the proximity almost a meaningless question. So I sympathize with the folks up in Coburg, and I think we need to do something for small schools, but these steps, I believe, have to be incremental. So this is the first reasonable step to look at that whole small schools issue and remove the constraint. Any further questions on the orientation? We have some folks that wish to offer public testimony, and let's do that. We'll open the public session on Senate Bill 509. Dr. Peter Tarzian, Randy Hildebrand is here representing Senator Klarno's office, so we'll bring Randy forward. And then also Dr. Peter Tarzian and Senator, did you wish to offer testimony on this bill? Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I understand.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to testify today on Senate Bill 509. Having grown up in a community just east of the school district, I personally understand the sensitivity to this issue and also understand the value of small schools to the state of Oregon. When I was just 13 years old, I was moved from a school district which had less than 100 children in the high school. Of course, as you can envision, I was treated with a lot of personal attention. And then I moved to Lake Oswego Public Schools, where there was over 500 kids in junior high, 7th and 8th grade. That was quite a cultural shock, as you could imagine. And I felt like I was treated like a number. There wasn't a lot of personal attention. And I would just like to read into the record part of Senator Klarno's letter to the membership and remind you that Bev does represent Deschutes, Jefferson, and Klamath counties and also the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. As she stated in her letter, this bill does not change any part of the remote school funding formula. It simply changes five words to adequately fund all remote schools, and I'm sure you are well aware of that. This change would impact 20 small rural schools and remote elementary schools. These schools range in size from 65 to 180 students. Many of these schools, as you are aware, are facing closure. And I would encourage the residents of these districts to do what I think one other school did in Eastern Oregon and open up their homes to students from the valley and have them at the small and remote school. As I will provide to the committee membership, there was a Ben Bolton article reprinted from the Washington Post last summer, and the headline is "Researchers Making Case for Smaller Schools." In the article, it states that there are a lower dropout rate and less discipline problems, among other things, in the small and remote schools. And I understand there's testimony and concern by the committee members of funding for the larger schools. And me, I would personally argue that you could make that same argument with the ADM of any school, the weighting formula. Anytime you weight, let's say, the Portland Public Schools, in theory, that could take money away from these small and remote schools. And there was a number of years that many of these schools operated in a safety net situation. in the late 70s, early 80s, even up into 1990 before Measure 5. A lot of these schools were operating at a much lower dollar per student ratio when my research showed that the Portland Public Schools were still spending around $4,000 per student. So I'd just like to wrap up my testimony by saying I would sure encourage the committee to do whatever it can to pass this bill out of committee, and would like to ask any questions. I'm free to do so.
Any questions? Hearing and seeing none, thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you.
Dr. Tarzian, please.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I must admit it took a lot of nerve for me to come back a second time because I sort of feel like the flea on the dog. I have listened to some of the arguments in opposition to this legislation, and I'm really here this morning to provide just a little bit of additional information and comments about those arguments and concerns. I've provided you with prepared testimony. I will deviate from that somewhat, but I do wish to make 3 points. First, and this is a point having to do with small schools and their relationship to small communities that they serve. And so it reflects a recognition of the comment Senator Beyer made about Coburg. Small schools are a fundamental part of a small community. They provide a fundamental part of the social and economic infrastructure of small communities. So whether it's Coburg or Falls City, that fact is definitely very true and needs to be recognized. I would suggest, however, that this piece of legislation is really not about that, even though we do need to recognize it, and I believe that the legislature should recognize it, and that to recognize it is a difficult thing for the legislature to do at this point, because to recognize it, you know, means that you have to take dollars from somewhere else to recognize that problem statewide. With that said, this legislation, from our perspective, really is focused on putting the 20 or so small schools that have been left out of the correction process because of proximity on equal footing with the rest of the small schools that are receiving the correction. And so it's an equity issue for us and a fairness issue for us. The second point that I would like to make is that some of us, as a result of 1999 legislation that was passed to support small high schools, now find ourselves in a situation where we are using the small high school correction dollars that you have provided us through a phase-in formula over the next 6 years. We're using some of that money to sustain our small elementary schools because we don't have enough money to spread around. And so we are, in a sense, shortchanging the use of those dollars, the small high school correction dollars, because they flow to our general fund as a part of the formula to, in fact, support our small elementary schools, because our small elementary school, and in my case and in the other cases, are not eligible for small elementary school correction dollars. And so this is one of the reasons that we support this legislation. Finally, I guess I'd like to provide you with a real-life example of what this legislation would mean to my elementary school, because I haven't heard that a lot in the testimony yet. If this legislation were to pass and our elementary school would be eligible for the small school correction dollars, it would provide the ability for all of our elementary school students to participate in an organized physical education program a music program, an art program, updating our library, purchasing new science, social studies, and math adoptions, and fully upgrading our use of technology in the classroom. And then if I might close, I'd like to make a comment about the discussion that Senator Castillo and Senator Beyer had with the chair. The reality of a small school issue in a district like mine, where we are not allowed to collect the small school correction because of our proximity to another school, is an important one to think about. Inside a school district like the Eugene Ford J. School District, or in the case of the district adjacent to mine, the Dallas School District, it is possible, because of the ability to adjust attendance boundaries, to solve the problem. It might mean that a small school might have to be closed. It might mean that children might have to be bused a little bit further. But it is possible to solve the problem. It is not possible to solve the problem in my case. We have no way in which to redistrict our school district to address the problem. And so we're stuck, as are the other school districts, or many of them anyway, of being unable to solve the problem simply because we can't redistrict across district boundaries. Thank you. I'm open to any questions.
Mr. Chair, I really appreciate what you have to say, and I totally agree with where you're coming from. Let's face it, the problem, the bigger problem, is that the whole system is underfunded. Mm-hmm. So what we have to do to help you is we're taking from Peter to pay Paul, yeah, is what the scenario we're looking at here.
Actually, you'd be giving to Peter.
Or giving to case. Peter. All right. Still, you get my point.
Senator, and
so it is so difficult, when really the solution is we need more money for all of our schools. I want to see us give your district more money and help your students have all the programs you just talked about. That's what our state should be doing. We should be doing that for all districts in our state, and we can do it if we have the will to do it. So I guess what I'm saying is that what I would like to see us do in this proposal is come up with more funding to give to your school districts, instead of taking away from the districts that I represent, who are already dealing with school closures and large class sizes and all of those other issues. So I support what this bill is trying to accomplish totally. It's just that I don't want it to come at the expense of the children in my district.
Actually, Dr. Tarzian and Senator Castillo, the support for the whole system comes from the small school. Every other small and remote school in Oregon has already been adjusted. So the problem that we get to is that these small schools are supporting, by taking less dollars than are allocated to other schools that are similarly situated. So you can stand in a district that's large and look at the small schools and say, to make this adjustment takes from us. Or you can stand in the small district and look at the large district and say, we've already felt the formulaic change when we made the shift to all the other schools but our school.
Eugene made a huge shift in funding. It lost lots of funding in the equalization, and we've had to cut budgets in order to help the rest of the school districts in our state. So Eugene has also taken part in that as well.
Right. Every school district that funded their schools at the top level, which is most of the rural schools in Eugene, were either flat funded or lost in the equalization. But these schools, for some technical reason, I'm not quite sure, we're not brought into this formula. And I think that's the substance of the doctor's testimony, is that it's the technical correction, and do we let these schools just continue to starve while we stand on the principle? They are in trouble.
Absolutely.
And I agree with you. I wish there were more money.
And Mr. Chair, I don't want to see these school districts start, so I say we go out and find another $3.3 million to add to the school funding to help these districts, rather than take away from other districts to do it.
Question, Senator Ness.
Chairman, I think actually Senator Castillo may have just talked me into a yes vote on this. Senator Castillo and I, we disagree. I don't believe that the system is underfunded. I think, in fact, it's probably overfunded. But I have different arguments for that. What my concern is, because I'm sympathetic to the small schools, I'd like to be able to help them because I recognize that in this grand strategy, they're the ones that tend to lose. But how did the numbers in these runs go change so dramatically from $2.6 million impact to $3.3 million impact?
Well, happily, Senator Minnis, that's a question I can defer to Paul.
There were a couple of things. One was that some of the data in the first run simply wasn't correct, and that it was corrected through Steve's discussion with the Department of Education. The other issue was that Steve had gotten some more detailed information on just exactly what the distance is. He had assumed they were all 12 miles, and some were a little bit less than that. So that changed some of the allocation among the schools. So it was, one, some erroneous data he had, and two, was some additional information that made the change.
So, Mr. Chairman, how sure are we that we have the right data now?
These figures are pretty solid, I think, Senator, because he spent a couple of weeks on getting those.
Further questions for Dr. Tarzian? Thank you for bringing us the news from Falls City, where all the children are above average and all the et cetera.
Thank you.
I'm glad to finally reverse that robbing Peter thing. That's been bugging me for a long time.
Colleagues, I don't think this is an issue that gets easier, so I think we'll just go ahead and have a work session on it and call the question and see whether we will move the bill forward and help the small schools or we will not. So we'll close the work session and the public session, but before I do, I will ask if there's any other person here present that wishes to offer testimony on Senate Bill 509. If you do come forward, Representative, do you wish to offer testimony, or are you just here to witness the... Oh, brother. After the vote, thank you. Ma'am, announce your name, please, for the record.
My name is Sandy McMahon, and Chairman and honorable members, I'm a parent. And I feel that living in a small community, one of the few opportunities our children have is a good, solid education. Right now we come from a wheat and farming community where we don't have a lot of money. I think we all know that it costs more to educate kids at small schools. We don't have many kids in our classes, but if you look at our state test scores, we do wonderful. I can provide my kids love, basic needs, but something that's really important to their future is their education. And I guess I would just like to tell you a story about my son and his experience in our small little school. I did have my children in private Catholic schools because I wanted the small class, a good education, and my son, I signed with him until he was 3. He has a speech disability. In first grade, the teacher said, "Your son isn't going to learn how to read." I thought, well, I need to go out in my community, look for other schools, research all of them, and Petersburg was truly a diamond in the rough. My son is now in the second grade. He's in the top reading level in his class, and he was selected the lead person in his play this year. And that is from someone who told me my child would not learn how to read. My fourth grade son at St. Mary's, A+, top of his class, didn't do a darn thing. Never studied. First day at Petersburg, his teacher assigned him a book report. He wrote it on the bus on the way to school. So I go to school to pick him up that evening. The teacher is waiting for me in the hall. Mrs. McNabb, I really believe in making children at the school work to their top of their potential. Do you mind if I send this book report back home to your son? You know how many times my son redid a book report? 5 times. That was to the best of his ability. So the 5th time, when he got an A, she said, from now on, this is the level that I'm going to expect you to work in my class. That is the type of education that we want for our children. That is the type of education that small class sizes, individual teacher involvement, parent involvement, You know, my children are an individual plant, as is every other child in our school. Our school is a multicultural school, all walks of life, but when we walk through that door, everybody is one, and everybody is treated on an individual and of their ability. And I just don't think that these are the type of schools that we want to be closing. There are 96 schools that currently are getting this funding. 20 are not because of a technicality. Our school that is 6 miles from us, we cannot go to. I can. I'm a tuition-paying parent. I choose not to go to my district. But we can't share resources. We can't share teachers. Spanish music, we can't share any of that. We are 13 miles from our next school, and it's back roads. They would spend much too much time traveling to provide the resources for our children. We would have Native Americans, if our school closes, that are going to be on the bus over an hour. They simply won't go to school. Right now, we have 100% graduation of our Native American population. These are not the schools that we want to be closing. These are the only opportunity for our children in sometimes an otherwise very depressed environment, as well as being a community center where we have picnics, it's where families have Thanksgiving. You know, you take away these schools, you take away the community. So I would just really appreciate just adding the 20 schools that really should have been included in the 96 in this bill was originally passed. Well, thank you.
Questions? Hearing and seeing none, we'll close the public hearing and open the work session on Senate Bill 509. The chair will entertain a motion on Senate Bill 509.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 509 to the floor of the due pass.
Senator Starr moves Senate Bill 509 to the floor of the due pass recommendation. Any questions on the motion? Objections to the motion?
Sure.
Senator Nunes?
Well, just to say, I'm going to vote in favor of this at this point. But I want some clarity at some point from this committee and the chair in terms of directions, because I need to know what it is we're attempting to do for small schools and rural schools, because I'm sympathetic to that, but I'm taking a risk here because my districts are losing money. And so I take a hit either way. I can go either way on this thing, and I'm going to get hit by somebody who's going to complain about what we've done. So if this is the small schools initiative, I'd like someone to declare that, because I'm going to have voted for my sympathetic to small schools bill at this point. And, you know, I guess I want to see the big picture and how this is going to fit.
Senator Nunes, I respect your comments, and I accept the responsibility to come back to the committee with the formula adjustments that we'll be doing in a series of bills, Senate Bill 61, 252, 260, 519, which are other bills that the chair intends to bring before the committee in array. And I accept the admonition that we should do these things in the context of the rest of those bills. I appreciate the fact that you'll support this bill and accept the responsibility to show you and the rest of the committee members how this bill fits. And if there are further adjustments necessary or other issues that we need to consider, we will do those things. Senator Perkins.
Mr. Chair, I have a little uneasiness supporting the bill as well, but I'm going to support it because essentially, for me, it's a Hobson's choice. I mean, it's a crisis vote. It's a series of bad choices. I absolutely agree with Senator Castillo that the solution in these cases, and I think the term for this session for me has become zero sum has become the politics of scarcity. And we're advantaging one group to the disadvantage of another. That's not how we should be doing education policy and funding. Having said that, the two school districts in Lane County that are mentioned here, I had nothing to do with the development of this bill. I was surprised to see that Marcola and Crow Applegate Lorraine were included in this bill. The fact of the matter is, of the 14 school districts that I have in my Senate district, these two school districts are probably the ones that are literally hanging by a thread. Marcola is within about 5 students of having to consolidate with a much larger school district, Springfield, and face the closure, almost certain closure, of at least one of their schools out there, because they're quite a ways out of Springfield. And Crow Applegate Lorraine already went through a situation several years ago where they literally closed down their middle school. and they've been faced with the possibility of having to close down Lorraine, which is the grade school element of this that benefits already in the small school formula. So I feel uncomfortable about it. I think we should add $3 million to the pot so that we don't have to face this choice. But having said that, I'm going to support it.
Any other comments? Senator Castillo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would love to vote for this bill if we were going to add another $3 million to the pot so that we could accomplish it without taking away from already severely underfunded school districts in our state. And I just think it's really sad that this is the solution that is being presented to us to solve this rather than one that makes a lot more sense. So I can't support it.
We'll call the roll.
No.
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye. So, bill passes. I would ask Senator Starr if you will do us the honor of carrying the bill to the Senate.
We'll do that.
Thank you. That is 509 we have before us. Senate Bill 177, and Senator Harper, you've been waiting patiently to make testimony on this bill, and while you organize your thinking, I'll ask the committee staff to refresh the committee's memory on the bill.
Senator Harper doesn't wait patiently for anything. Mr. Chair, that's been my experience.
Yeah.
I'm Chairman Farioli and committee members. What you have before you is Senate Bill 177. And what it's doing, to just give a quick synopsis, is it's establishing tax zones for school districts for the purpose of imposing different property tax rates on the amount of assessed value. So it provides the conditions of which a school district must meet for these tax zones. The districts must supply a portion of kindergarten through 12th grade to one group of taxpayers and supply all of kindergarten through 12th grade to another group of taxpayers. It is requiring a public hearing to be held to form those proposed tax zones. It outlines the requirements for the notice of the public hearing, which will include the estimated percentage of total amount of taxes that will be imposed by each school district in each zone. For those school districts which decide to establish these tax zones, and a resolution shall be adopted, which would be establishing the zones, the boundaries, and then each property tax amount that each school district would be imposing for each zone. It's going to limit the operating tax rate to the permanent property tax rate for each school district, and it requires a maximum operating tax rate to be determined for each tax zone. For the school district which provides a portion of the kindergarten through grade 12 education, then that school district's maximum tax rate shall be multiplied by a fraction, which is going to represent the portion of total operating taxes that school district is imposing in the first year of establishing the tax zone. It's going to begin in July 1st of 2002. You have two amendments also, the dash one and the dash two. The dash one is going to establish an effective date for the bill, which will be 90 days after the end of the 2001 legislative session, and this is done in order to make this bill effective for the 2001-02 property tax roll. There's a dash two amendment, which is going to require any boundary changes in the future for establishing this tax zone to be recorded in the final form of the County Assessment Department of Revenue, and we had another bill recently dealing with those same issues of boundary changes. So basically what you have is school districts currently cannot include territory that is also included within the boundaries of another school district. But there are a few cases out there where there are overlapping of school boundaries, where one school district is providing one level of education to the students, and then another school district is providing a different level of education. But under current law in the property tax system, local districts must levy the same tax rate to all taxpayers. And also with school districts, as we passed last session, they have to report their property tax collection amount of their entire permanent tax rate authority as their local revenues to the school funding formula. So for school districts, they have two different issues that they have to deal with. And with what we have today before us is Klamath County's particular case. And there you've got the two school districts, Klamath County Schools versus Klamath Falls City Schools, which have overlapping school boundaries. And prior to Measure 50, the Klamath County assessor extended a portion of the Klamath County School District's levy in the overlapping area for the elementary school. And then a portion of the Klamath Falls City School District's levy was assessed for the high school. So after Measure 50 and the establishing then of permanent tax rates for all the local districts, the assessor then was required to extend both those permanent rates for those school districts in that overlapping area. And you had a difference of about a dollar between the two different school rates. $4 for the Klamath County schools versus the $3 rate for Klamath Falls schools. And so then for those taxpayers in that overlapping area, you had a very high total tax rate of over $7 for those taxpayers in that overlapping area. So basically, and in that particular case, you had, you know, a very high tax rate for taxpayers to pay, and you also had significant Measure 5 tax compression because of that. So in 2000, the Department of Revenue issued a supervisory order that allowed the Klamath County assessor to levy the full operating tax amount for the Klamath County School District, but no levy amount for the Klamath Falls City School District in the overlapping area. And then the school districts just agreed amongst themselves on the transfer amount between the school districts. So as far as the revenue impact, it shall have a minimal revenue impact. It should reduce those taxes slightly in Klamath County. It'll depend on what is the amount that each of the local districts decide and taxpayers want in the county.
Mr. Chair.
Question.
I guess the fundamental question is, does it affect any other area other than Klamath County?
Senator Corcoran, this is not restricted to just Klamath County.
Right.
Okay, it's a question of whether there is an incentive now to want to expand your boundaries into another school district there. It seems like, you know, that may not be a strong incentive. Right now, you do have, like in Harney County, there is there are overlapping school districts, but they have pretty low permanent rates, so they want to impose their full permanent rate. And so there wouldn't be an incentive for them to want to have these tax zones because that means you're going to be levying less than your permanent rate. So it's just a case in which, in the future, would there be a possibility that a school district would want to extend their rates, extend their boundaries in order to be able to serve, you know, maybe a high school or something in another area. And then again, then they would go in there and establish a lower than their permanent rate for that area.
Okay, thanks.
Good question, Senator Corcoran, and one that shows me that you track this much better than I did. Let's find out from Senator Harper, what are we doing?
This is the Labor Committee, isn't it?
It is. Today it is.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Steve Harper, Senate District 30, and I've wondered what this bill did. And Senator Corcoran's question, I was under the impression that we had the only one of these moldy figs in the whole state, but there might be some others out there, but
Mr. Chair,
what we do is...
Senator Corcoran?
Is this the one that makes Klamath Falls the state horse?
It's carousel, Steve.
The carousel.
Okay, thank you. Now I'm totally corrected.
We do have Department of Revenue that wrote the bill, John Phillips, our county assessor, Rich LeCue, and the county superintendent, so I would encourage you to bring them up, ask them questions. Don't ask me anything on this.
Let's do that. Let's bring those that panel forward.
You waited all that time for that test? My gosh.
I'm a little embarrassed myself.
I thought that he was moldy fig.
He doesn't work the whole way.
Gentlemen, I think what we've seen here is brilliance and delegation. That's a true command capability.
And if you guys don't know anything about this, we're in deep trouble.
Go ahead.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Phillips. I'm with the Oregon Department of Revenue, Property Tax Division. This bill is the result of some work we've been doing in the last, I don't know, 6 years or so, superintendents of the county and city school districts in Klamath County and the assessor and myself. and other members of the department, as well as Senator Harper. There's a problem, and we're bringing you a solution. The problem is as Lizbeth mentioned, there's the two school districts' boundaries overlap. We believe this is the only circumstance in the state where this is actually the situation. Under current law, we also believe the law would require the tax rates, the full tax rates of each district, be imposed within the overlap district. The taxpayers in that district, that in the overlap portion of the district, would not favor that kind of a result, as you can probably well imagine. So our solution to the problem is to provide for some zones to be created where there's less than a full range of services and thus less than the full K through 12 services extended in that particular area by a school district. And that way, a portion of a district's levy could be extended into that area, and a portion of the other overlapping district's levy could be extended, solving the problem. My testimony, I break it down section by section, and I don't want to belabor anything. If perhaps we could just go right to questions.
Senator Minnis, did you want to make a motion to move this to the floor? Oh, your question, sir.
Yes. So I'd like to go to work session. I'm fine with the bill. It makes sense. Yeah.
Anybody else have those questions for these gentlemen? This just seems to be one of those things that here is self-evidently a good thing for us to do. So if there's no other testimony or questions from the committee, we'll close the public hearing, go to work session. Motion, Senator Minnis, you were...
Just going to move Senate Bill 177 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Minnis moves Senate Bill 177 to the floor of the due pass recommendation. Are there any questions?
No amendments.
Any objections? Do we have amendments? Senator Minnis wishes to move some amendments.
Which amendments do I need to move, sir?
I believe that would be the dash one and the two.
Chairman, I'll amend my motion then to adopt the dash one amendment on Senate Bill 177.
The dash one amendments are moved by the senator. Are there any questions on the motion? Hearing and seeing none, any objections to moving dash one? Dash ones are moved. So ordered. Dash two amendments?
Move dash two amendments.
Senator Minnis moves the dash two amendments into the bill. Any questions on the motion? Any objections? So ordered. We have a motion on the floor. Senator, would you care to move Senate Bill 177 as amended?
As amended before the Senate of the due pass.
Senator Minnis moves the bill to the floor with as amended with the due pass recommendation.
Let's make Harper carry it.
Any objections? Questions? Hearing and seeing none, if there are no objections, and so on, Senator Harper will carry the bill. That, colleagues, is our work session. We will close the work session, and we will close the session for this morning.